While doing some research for the podcast, I found some studies made by a psychologist called Donald Supper. He made a lot of contributions to the vocational psychology field in a lot of writing in career development theories, and he used his studies and studies made by other psychologists to define four types of career patterns, which are stable, conventional, unstable, and multiple trial. And I'm not going to go deep into each one, but basically they're defined depending on how much someone has consistently followed the same type of work or hasn't followed the same type of work. So the stable career pattern he defined is someone who went directly from school or college to a type of work, and then they consistently followed that one. And then the unstable one he defined is for someone who has moved from one career or field to the other several times. And he wrote about these career patterns in 1954. And Jimmy and I thought this was very interesting because when you hear the definition of the quote unquote unstable career pattern, it kind of sounds as someone who is a generalist, so a person competent in several fields or activities, and someone who usually doesn't have a very linear career path, and that's why it could be considered unstable, according to that definition, of course. So we thought this could be a good starting point for a topic we hear a lot more nowadays, which is generalists and specialists. And my first thought about all of this, and I know you agree with me, is that I really don't like the terms unstable and stable because it states that one is good and the other one is bad. I very much prefer to have the same conversation, but talking about generalists and specialists.
You're listening to Breaking Patterns, a podcast where we talk about the times when life isn't linear, hear stories from people on non-traditional career journeys, and together explore the many ways of accomplishing our goals. I think that study is showing its age a little bit. If this study was conducted in the 1950s, the economy was much different, society and work culture were pretty different as well, and I'm sure that maybe we're a little more comfortable and probably turned off a little bit by the unstable label of that career path being more of a generalist. And I think just by our age group, we're a little more willing and comfortable with the idea that you might not have one area of expertise professionally your entire life or not. And just because you change careers mid-working life doesn't mean that you have an unstable professional resume. It just means, you know, you're looking for a little more generality.
Yeah. And in fact, now that I think about it, it kind of states that if you didn't do it in a way, just when you were starting, like when you were trying to become a professional or when you were starting your career, if you didn't go straight from college or school to a certain type of job, then you automatically have the unstable label, even if you later down the line.
Really?
Right, because it states that it's someone who had that career path. If someone didn't do it that way, then that would mean they have an unstable career pattern because they have had their ups and downs. You know, it's not linear, which is really interesting. And in fact, I think it's important to clarify that you can, according to that study, of course, if you think about it, you can still have a linear career path, so a stable path, a quote-unquote stable path, and still be a generalist because you studied or have been working on something that requires you to have different skills in many areas, like, for example, management. So it's not like being a generalist necessarily means that you fall in the quote-unquote unstable category according to that study. But it's still very interesting to see how switching jobs several times and because of that also being competent in different areas has such a negative connotation because, again, unstable just sounds really bad for me. This is a topic that I'm really excited about because you can get a lot of interesting opinions. And for this topic, we have an awesome guest, Stuart, who is an audio editor and producer at Castus with over 10 years of experience. So you'll hear from his story and perspective as well. But mainly before getting into the interview, Jimmy and I want to say that the reason why we think this topic is very relevant for the podcast is because breaking patterns for us means rethinking a lot of the concepts and ideas we've seen regarding careers. Not because we're doing something completely different now. People have been switching jobs and teaching themselves stuff since forever. But the thing we believe we need to break or stop doing, rather, is calling one career path good and the other one bad, because all of them are valid, and it's because it's just people, everyone doing their best to accomplish their goals.
I think it's also our objective in this podcast to, reframe some of these topics through the lens of being, you know, on the younger side of the professional working world, reframe some of how we think about jobs, generalist, specialist, working from home. Breaking patterns is all about looking at it in a new way, you know, or this is what we'd like to share with you.
Yes, exactly. And so, like we said, we have an awesome guest, Stuart Barefoot. And one of the first things we ask him is if he considers himself a specialist or a generalist. And let's hear what he had to say about that.
Stuart, can you tell us a little about your story here? And how did you become, I guess, like, how did you get involved in podcasting? And also, how did you get there? How did you come to Castus, I guess?
So at the time of this recording, I'm 32 years old, and I've heard it said that people around my age were the last generation of people who aspired to have a career in radio. So that's all that's to say is I started in radio, doing college radio initially. And then I fell in love with it, first doing like music shows and then writing like news and sports briefs. And I really just loved the concept that you could start with an idea, write it down, and then by the end of it, end up with this 30-second piece that everybody within the frequency could hear. That's how I got my start at WUAG in Greensboro, North Carolina. After that, I had a very, very brief career with our local NPR affiliate, editing stories and producing what we call evergreen content. Ultimately, in the long term, that job did not pan out. And so then I spent quite a few years just kind of working odd jobs, being a freelancer, dabbled in voice work, but all the while kind of kept at like the audio production and creating audio stories, podcasting with my friends, reaching out to clients. And yeah, ultimately ended up here with Castus after, you know, some varying degrees of success and failures at other ventures.
Were you kind of pivoting more towards podcasting consciously, or is it something that you kind of fell into with the jobs and the conditions that you found?
Yeah, it was really just a natural evolution because, you know, as a freelancer, you're always looking for like, well, what marketable skills do I have? What do I know how to do? And so I spent those years in radio learning how to edit and write for radio and learning, you know, some of the basic concepts behind sound design and that type of thing. So podcasting was just kind of the natural evolution of that. So it wasn't so much consciously I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a podcaster. It was more just kind of like, well, I'm a trained audio editor. I have experience with voice work and all that. And so it just kind of turned out that, you know, working on podcasting as a freelancer turned out to be a pretty good lifestyle, actually, because it rather than meeting, you know, tight deadlines and getting up early, like a lot of people who get their start in radio have to do, like I had to do briefly, you know, it turns out getting up at 4 a.m., no matter how rewarding you think the work is not a real pleasant experience. So yeah, I think in the long run, podcasting turned out to be great. So it's kind of a long-winded way of saying no, not consciously, but also yes. I mean, it was more just a practical application of my skills than it was something I had aspired to do.
That's so cool. It's funny because I didn't think about it that way, that podcasting is the evolution of the radio format, because in my case, I still have to explain to my family what I do, or like the company I work for. I still have to tell them that it's like they're radio shows because they don't understand any other term. So it's very interesting.
I find it useful to just explain it to people who still don't understand what podcasting is as radio on demand. Really, it's really the best way to describe it.
Actually, I just had the opportunity to try to explain to a friend who didn't know what podcasts were, and I had the same thing, Maru. I was looking for the words, and I found they're radio programs that you can download, and he was just saying, oh, but how many of them are there? And I thought,
That's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. Millions, I'm sure, you know. He was thinking, but who would listen if I wanted to start a podcast, who would listen to me? And I thought, well, there's many YouTube channels that people start, and you know, it's not necessarily for a big audience, but there's going to be an audience for everything, you know, or depending on what's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So Stuart, I wanted to give you some context about the topic that we want to talk about in today. And so we want to talk about generalist versus specialist. And basically how this idea came up is that while we were doing some research for the podcast, we found a lot of articles and studies that were made like years ago, like in the 90s. And a lot of like people who were doing these studies defined several career patterns, and they added like names and terms for each of the career patterns, depending of how many times you switched jobs and depending if you went to college or you didn't go to college. And we found that a lot of the career patterns that were called unstable were the ones where people just moved or switched jobs a lot. And it was kind of interesting because now you hear about that a lot in the terms of generalists versus specialists, because a generalist is someone who has switched jobs a lot and has various interests and knows a lot of things in various fields, but it's not necessarily like specialized in one. So we kind of now know the benefits of both, but it's very interesting when you see it that way, because you could, under that definition, you could think that before it was seen as an unstable career path and not a very good word to describe it now, because we know that there's room for both, right? So knowing your story and knowing how you were, like you mentioned, you were able to leverage your experience doing radio to move like to the next thing, which was podcasting, we want to know your thoughts and your insights on this topic as well. And just, I think the first question I would like to ask, because I know this is a very personal feeling, because I know that like you mentioned that you have been doing this since forever, it seems. So you have a lot of experience. But since it's a very personal feeling, like, do you consider yourself a specialist in this field of audio editing and audio recording? How do you feel about that?
Oh, man. So if I had to answer, I would say I'm a specialist, with a caveat of I don't necessarily think it's this binary state of existence, right? You're either a specialist or a generalist. I actually think if I were to tell my like life story in detail to people, or at least like my professional arc, a lot of people would probably think I'm a generalist just because I've done so many different things. You know, I've done voice work. I've worked doing like live production at like sporting events and that type of thing. And then, of course, now my work with like Castos and some of my other freelance clients making podcasts. So I think most people would look at me and think, well, that guy's a generalist. I've always put it more through the filter of I've always considered myself to be an audio editor and producer first. and everything else kind of falls under that umbrella. So I look at myself as a specialist, but I don't know how objectively I can judge myself. I don't know if that's sometimes ego getting in the way of, you know, maybe more accurately judging myself. So I think I'm a specialist, but I think maybe the jury's out on that one. I think there's people out there who might call me a generalist.
I would also call you a generalist because I think it depends on the perspective that you're looking at it from. You know, if we didn't know you in your pre-Castos time, so we know you as this specialist in audio editing and what you said, your background in university and kind of what you were doing before all kind of focus into that path, right? Of audio editing, or, you know, if you're talking about voiceover work, it's still audio, right? And I would definitely see you as a specialist, but like you said, it's kind of, it's neither black or white. It doesn't have to be necessarily one or the other, right?
Yeah, I agree. It's an interesting concept. How do you guys see yourself? Where do y'all think y'all? Not to like turn the tables on you guys, but I am curious. Like, where do you guys see yourself on that spectrum?
So I just wanted to quickly mention that when you said it's so true, and I actually see it in the same way, because I actually think there's like another side of things where actually you can be a generalist but inside the same field. So to my eyes, actually, you're a specialist, but if you take a deeper look, then you're a generalist, but inside the same field, because you know a lot of things inside that area, right? But for me, I do consider myself a generalist, mainly because if you look at like my job's history, you will see that I've had like very different jobs in periods of like 2 years or 1 year doing very different things. I've worked editing videos. I've worked as an English teacher for kids. I've worked in sales, and now I work as a developer. So I would definitely see myself as a generalist, but I am trying now to specialize more, of course, in my current job, which is like the thing that I know now that I love, which is like developing and doing web development. And actually, don't quote me on this, but I know that there's this other new term, you know, not now there's a lot of new concepts coming out every week. But there's this term called like T-shaped developer, like the word, the letter T, which is that you have broad knowledge, like in a lot of things. For example, I say developer, but you focus on one or two. So you're able to do a lot of things as a developer, but your focus or the main thing you feel more comfortable working on is like two or three things. So I think we're moving on from just like the black and white of if you're a generalist or a specialist, because like Stuart said, there are so much more to it, and you cannot put like a pin on it and say, oh, I'm a specialist or you're a generalist. And the really cool thing about that is that I used to think that you had to pick, like, if you're a generalist or you're a specialist, and then that's it. But the cool thing about it is that now, as you move forward in your career, you can say, oh, now it's time for me to learn new things, or it's now for me to focus on one. So it really depends on your goals. And that's what the main thing I love about moving from the term calling it unstable or stable career pattern or something like that, because just like you deciding what to do next depending on what you want to accomplish.
Yeah, I mean, it would almost feel, depending on the job skill, more unstable just to know one thing and to have only ever done one thing. I mean, can you imagine being in a job field where, you know, your skill somehow gets like antiquated or can be automated, and then you're like, oh man, I spent all this time learning this one exact specific thing, and now nobody really needs that anymore. So I think it's a matter of perspective. I don't know how many jobs like that actually exist, and no way am I like belittling the work anybody does, because I think, you know, most of it's probably pretty important. But yeah, I mean, I think like as far as like a feeling of stability, how I internalize things, I almost feel a little bit more stable right now, knowing, all right, I know how to do a little bit of everything. So if something for whatever reason doesn't pan out, if a project falls through, okay, might hurt in the short term, but long term I'll be all right because I've got these marketable skills and some pretty cool experiences.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think there's a component of the changing times and the new generation of work and dealing with the challenges and the benefits that come our way that look a lot different from maybe our parents or and grandparents' generations is, you know, the differentiation of labor was, you know, having somebody necessarily specialize in a particular part of the process. And now it's expanded. We're looking more towards, we're prioritizing mental health and kind of better work-life balance. And also we do have a lot of people like me and Maru who are, you know, changing jobs or being kind of generalists in like a more horizontal way with career hopping. So, to piggyback off what Maru said, I also consider myself a generalist. In my education background, I taught many different subjects and different age groups. And I always really wanted to find kind of a specialization, something to hold on to, like an interest. But it just never panned out really. And then I was looking for something else after my teaching career. But I do agree that being a generalist has, like being a specialist, has a lot of great benefits to it. You know, people who know a lot can kind of synthesize different things, and they can. I think you know, for like to take it a silly example, in Casos, my job is specific. It is to support the customers, but sometimes I feel more like a generalist when I'm assisting a developer or when I catch something that's not in my actual work assignment responsibility area. Maybe, oh, Francois, this has a spelling mistake, for instance. It's not really my job, but I feel that I can add to my general skills to support the team.
Yeah, and that's one of the cool things about Casos is like, there's a lot of really smart people there. So it's we all kind of have our assigned job role, but it's really good to know that like we can come in and assist on a project if needed.
One big thing I love about Casos is that we all have a very different like background story of have had like different jobs and like unique journeys and everything. And like you said, we all can help in different areas that are not necessarily our current position. And one big thing I think about that is that we're all able to leverage our past experience and also our current job experience to help others in the team. And I think that's in the generalist side, I think that's what's most important when you're a generalist. It is to be able to leverage your past experience to fill a new job that you want to do, for example, or to help others. And of course, that also applies when you're a specialist, but I think mainly when you're a generalist, because of that you know so many little things in different areas that even if you're working in a completely different position, you're still able to bring something to the table. And I think that's really cool.
Maybe you need both. Maybe you need both specialist and generalist too. Like, you know, a good example is if I get on an airplane, I really hope that pilot's a specialist and not a generalist. I really hope that like 2 years ago, they weren't a bartender or like, you know, like I don't want to know that like the flight attendant is moonlighting as the co-pilot or the first mate or whatever. So yeah, we do need specialists.
Absolutely a great point for a world of both generalists and specialists, and we are all welcome here. Stuart, speaking a little about generalists and versus specialists, how do you see the interview process playing out when maybe you're a specialist as well, considering in this scenario that you're a specialist? How was your interview process with Casos or other things? How do you demonstrate your specialty to those who don't know you? Can you talk any about any tips that you have for the fellow specialists that might be listening that maybe might want to look for something more general or even something more specific?
To answer the first part of that question, in my case, there wasn't really a specific interview process with Casos. Craig, our founder, and I got connected actually through another project I was working on. They were using Casos just as their host site. And I was helping out with some of like the production and all that. And I got connected. We were troubleshooting some, you know, pretty minor issue as it turned out. And so Craig and I got connected that way and got to talking shop. Craig being, you know, really smart, figured out the problem, fixed it pretty quickly. And, you know, then he mentioned to me that he was the founder of the company. And I just remembered being very impressed that a founder of a company would be on a support call with a relatively small client, to be honest. So, yeah, we got to talking about like some of the work I was doing. And yeah, he asked me to come on board to kind of work with some of their clients, some of the original programming we're doing here at Casto. So in my case, I got very lucky. It wasn't really a formal job interview or anything like that. Now, I will say, I think one of the reasons that happened is because I had already demonstrated through some of like, you know, the work I've put out there that I have this ability to put together shows, to be creative. So the advice, Jimmy, to people who are specialists, and particularly if you work in a creative field, make a point of doing the type of work that you want to do. And that sounds really vague, but let me clarify. So like, let's say you're a writer, for instance, okay? And maybe you've got a job doing some writing. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're doing some work that you're not really stoked about and you don't really want to put it out there as part of your portfolio because you don't want to get pigeonholed as that type of a writer. Well, maybe make a blog and in your free time, write the types of stories you want to get paid to write. If you're a visual artist, same deal, right? In your spare time, make a point of creating the types of logos and doing the design work you would want to do. I know it's kind of a big ask sometimes, do the type of work you want to do without getting paid for it. But if you take a little bit of time each week to do the type of work you're really stoked about and create a portfolio, that's big. That I think that personally probably does more for you in an interview than the questions that you answer, than how you format a resume and that type of thing. So yeah, that's the advice. Have something tangible that you can show. Some people are awkward in interviews. It's kind of a weird way to get to know a person, you know, through a series of questions and answers. So yeah, that's, I've always made a point of, you know, being able to highlight the work I'm most proud of. And since I've been able to do that consistently, it's always served me well.
You brought up a really great point about the comfort level of the interview. Kind of related to that is Castos didn't require any resume on my part when I was looking for the job. And I thought that was a really nice way of signaling that they're looking for something a little different. But I also really, really appreciate what you said about building a body of work and knowing that that can be a struggle. But that's really great advice for people who are listening in, who are looking for that career change or to learn a new skill for some other opportunity in their lives. And really, it is such a big ask, but it can pay off so many dividends at the time of an interview or getting those opportunities, getting those that foot in the door with somebody, you know, like a CEO on a support call, for instance.
A lot of times the trajectory in terms of like career satisfaction and the type of living that you make and the quality of work you'll be able to do is somewhat similar to someone as if you go and get, say, like a specialized 4-year degree. And you know, the traditional way of, you know, we were always taught that you get a job. The trajectory there's still pretty similar, right? I mean, typically those first few jobs after college or when you start your career aren't the best in the world, right? They don't pay quite as well. It's usually in a challenging work environment more times than not. Freelance work is usually the same way, right? I mean, you're usually, again, you're accepting some of those jobs that don't pay quite as well. You're sometimes working on projects that are strange, and I could do probably 2 or 3 podcast episodes about some of the types of projects I had to work on, you know, starting out. But yeah, those first couple years are going to be a little bit more challenging, and it's a tough ask, but I think typically the people who do that work have a little more success down the line than those who don't. Some people have beginner's luck, sure. Some people are so unbelievably talented that they do land like a really good gig when they're really young, and props to them, but that wasn't me.
What would you say to the people who maybe are nervous about really, really giving it their all for like a starting off in a freelance career with not a lot of opportunities? And I guess maybe specifically about kind of like the mental health or like the hustle culture that we have sometimes in some of our areas of work. Do you have any thoughts on that at all about maybe like if I've decided to that I'd like to quit Casos and become a graphic artist for an illustration company, and I want to start with freelance, do you have any advice on how to think about it? Maybe not necessarily professional advice.
I'll leave the specific mental health components of it actually to professionals, just because I think they're probably more qualified to talk about that than I am. But in terms of like how to approach having a career as a freelancer, I never recommend anybody just quit their job. I actually think if you want to become a freelancer, having a full-time job is actually one of the best things for you. And I'll tell you why. Because if you're freelancing full-time, you're going to actually make a lot of compromises and decisions that maybe aren't the best like for your career necessarily, right? I mean, I can speak from experience. I spent a lot of time early on in my early to mid 20s working on projects that didn't pan out, put a lot of effort into things that ended up not being good, that I developed just like bad technical habits that looking back on, I almost wish I had a full-time job at the time and could have spent some of my spare time developing, you know, a better base set of skills. So if you have a full-time job, and you're wanting to quit it, try freelancing on the side a little bit at first. Again, I know that's a big ask. That's easier said than done because you're working, say, 9 to 5. You come home, you're tired from that. If you don't like your job, it's probably mentally pretty draining. And then you got to say, oh, now I've got to spend, you know, the hours between, say, like 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. working on this other skill. But if you've got kind of your basic needs met, right, your income, maybe your healthcare, all the things that we pretty much need anymore to survive, then you can focus on building a set of skills and then maybe applying those where you most want them to. Like I've known people who are freelance, you know, graphic designers that work full time. But now they relate to design work a lot better because they're only taking on the projects that they really, really want to and they're really excited about. And eventually, maybe they will be able to leave those full-time jobs that take up, you know, 8 hours of their day, 5 days a week, 50 weeks out of the year. But they've really been able to establish like a very solid portfolio.
I really like the advice about not necessarily quitting your full-time job. And I would put it like in more general terms, because I have also seen a lot of stories of people who decide to like save a lot during a period of time. So they're able to quit their job and make a transition to another field or something, but they have some money saved, so they don't feel like they're running out of time. Because I speak also from my experience, I didn't do freelancing. One time I wrote a kid's story to earn some money. That was a very random job, but I didn't do freelancing. But I did, like, I started learning how to program while working a full-time job, and it felt like it was heavy. It was really, really tiring. But now that I look back, I can say the same thing, that I'm glad that I didn't quit my job, because I would have been really desperate. And even though, again, it's a really tiring thing to do, I wasn't as desperate as I could have been if I had quit my job, because I would have been like, my life depends on this, because I need to pay rent, I need to do all these things. But at least I was able to and enjoy the process a little bit, because it felt like I was like in my spare time or at night or whenever I had the chance, I was doing something for myself to become like the person I wanted or to have the job that I wanted. But yeah, I definitely agree, because I have seen both. I have friends who have quit their jobs because they're like, no, I'm going to make a career change right now. And it is, I'm not saying it's not possible, because I'm sure people have done it. But I'm sure it's just, you will feel a lot, you will put more pressure on yourself if you do it that way, because you will feel like the clock is ticking and you need to do it now, because otherwise you won't have the money to pay rent or whatever it is that you need to do. And yeah.
Maru, when you were going through that process of teaching yourself development, did you have any periods of self-doubt that you could actually conquer this, or that you could achieve what you were looking to achieve when you started out?
Yeah, definitely. I had so many periods of self-doubt because when you're learning something, or even when you're doing freelancing because you want to reach some stability in your life or something like that, it feels so foreign. It feels like it's so far away that what you're doing now, it feels so small or insignificant compared to what you want to accomplish. And it's self-doubt also because you compare yourself a lot to other people. You're like, oh, other people, like Stuart said, it's just like you were born a natural and you learn how to do it like 3 months and then you got your first job. And yeah, I experienced that a lot. And it's not easy when you're experiencing it. And I think what helped me a lot is that once I read a tweet that one person said that your progress is not lost because you're seeing it as if it was insignificant, but your progress is stored. I think that's from a book, but your progress is stored. So everything that you're doing day by day, no matter how small you think it is, all that is being stored because down the line you will see what all of that you did accomplished. So I try to repeat myself that every single day, but yeah, it's just a hard process. And even though you're trying to be as positive as you can about it, it's just something that happens. And I actually want to ask the same question to Stuart, because with so many years of experience and of doing freelance work and doing all sorts of things, I wanted to know, like, have you dealt with self-doubt or even imposter syndrome?
All the time.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. All the time, particularly in a creative field, right? Where you're seeing on social media, everybody's always posting their best work and you're like, man, I'm not nearly that good. But what I try to keep in mind and what I have to remind myself of on nearly a daily basis is, you know, people only on social media most of the time only ever really share their best moments, right? Whether it's like their personal life or their professional work, you know, they're not really showing the work that wasn't very good. Or, you know, the trial and error that went into that. So, yeah, I mean, I deal with that all the time, particularly because, you know, in the world of audio, I mean, there's people who just make work that is absolutely stunning. And so, yeah, there's an inferiority complex. There's imposter syndrome, largely because, you know, my career in radio didn't pan out. Like, that was the plan, right? That was the, you know, for me, that was the plan going out of college. That's what I thought I was supposed to do. So I didn't have as much maybe like official training and experience as I felt like I should have had. So, you know, a lot of it was like learning things on my own or, you know, like watching like YouTube videos, even though I did have like a base knowledge from like my time in college and learning under some really good people at my local NPR affiliate. But yeah, all that's to answer Mari's question saying, yeah, all the time, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, all those things. I deal with them all the time.
I thought it was so interesting, Maru, what you said about storing. What was the quote again?
Like, your progress is not wasted. I think that was the word. It's not wasted. It is stored. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's cool because I remember you were reading Atomic Habits.
That's from where it's
okay.
from.
So I was thinking of that book and thinking, well, all your little habits that might not actually be connected to your professional life also influence your professional life as well. And so all that progress that you're storing, either if it's a new skill, learning something like CSS or learning about RSS feed podcasting technology, and it doesn't necessarily relate to what you're doing in the day-to-day moment, but that's going to be ambient experience or knowledge that you can lean on. So like an example from my teaching career was, because I was always interested in technology and computers growing up, I gravitated to helping people in like a support role in my classrooms, or rather in my schools. So I was kind of like the unofficial tech support of the teaching staff, because that's what I really love to do. And I was able to really transfer those skills from my interests, my preference, you know, like my hobbies, into this job at Castos, and using kind of like the other skills that I have for sharing and teaching, and just kind of pushing them together. So very cool that I really like that that quote of, because I think it demonstrates to me that all of it is valid. You know, you're not wasting any time, no matter if you wanted to go for a walk with your dog. That's equally important.
Yeah, that's really cool. I wanted to go back to one thing because I made a note of something Stuart said regarding also specialists and how it's known that when you're an expert in a field, you can reach a point where you, it's not necessarily that you stop learning, or maybe you lose some of the willingness to learn new things. But I just wanted to know, like, especially in the audio editing and podcasting field or in general, how do you continue learning, Stuart? Like, how do you stay up to date with the new technologies or with the new trends? And how often do you have those times where you're like, doing this job, I learned something new today?
All the time. You know, I try to, as far as like staying up to date on like technology and new trends, you know, there's newsletters I subscribe to. There's people I follow who make a point of learning all these new skills and collecting all this information for people. I'm not the most proactive in terms of like, I'm just going to sit here and learn what this new function in Adobe does. It's more kind of like, oh no, there's a problem related to this project. I need to get it figured out. That's how I've learned a lot of things over time. But yeah, I mean, all the time, you know, connecting with people, learning from other experts. I try to attend, you know, virtual webinars and seminars and that type of thing where people are sharing information. So from both from like a philosophical standpoint of like, all right, how do we like weave together an audio narrative, that type of thing, to also like tangible, hey, like here's some plugins that you can use for your DAW. Here's how you can implement using the script into your workflow. All the time trying to do stuff like that. And that's the type of thing like you talked about. Like it can be frustrating because it's like every time I start feeling like, yeah, like I'm a pretty good audio editor, there's like something that comes up that I can't do, or there's this new, you know, software that seems kind of scary or whatever. And it can be kind of frustrating to spend time learning skills that I thought I'd already developed. And it's frustrating because it can take time away from like what I'm doing. You know, as a freelancer, you know, our time is literally money, it seems like, but it's still time worth spent. It's equally as the time I spend doing that is equally as important as, you know, the hours I put in on a client's project, because it's like, hey, you know what, if I take, you know, a few hours a week to work on like personal development, then it's going to pay off. It's going to show up in the work I do as well.
I've got one other silly question, but Maru, I don't know if you have anything as well.
No, the only thing I wanted to add regarding like learning new things is that I think the takeaway from that bit of the conversation is that no matter what you decide to do with your career, doesn't matter if you're a generalist or if you're a specialist or if you're working to be one of those, you always have to continue learning and have like a beginner's mind, because you can always learn something new from something who, this is for someone who just started in the industry, for example, or of course from someone who has been doing it for 10 plus years. But you always have to be willing to listen and to learn new things, right?
And we're the right industry for that, I think. One thing I love about like podcasting and the world of like audio and like creativity in general is, you know, it's very, very, very rare that you'll come across a person who is like, no, my knowledge is proprietary. I'm not sharing my secret sauce with you. You know, it's very rare that you meet someone who climbs up the ladder and shuts their door on the way up. You know, 99% of the people I've interacted with and people I've reached out to, whether it's through like Three Clips or Audience, you know, two of our original shows at Castos, more often than not, people are more than willing to come in and share their knowledge about the craft and the industry and the art of making these things. And the finer points too, right? I mean, the stuff that I don't know as much about, the marketing, the back end monetization, that type of things I don't know about. There's people who are whizzes when it comes to that. And so that's the cool thing about not just Castos, but just this industry we're in general. I mean, people have just been remarkably cool about sharing their time and knowledge with other people. It's really just awesome to be a part of.
Man, I think that's a great way to end this conversation. Thank you, Stuart. That thinking, I'm getting jazzed about being in this field now, because I started thinking as well while you were talking about all the interesting stuff that's happening with AI machine translations and things. It's something that I really didn't know existed, and it's really interesting to kind of have an eye on that a little bit.
Yeah. And I think as long as, you know, we're using AI in a way that's like pretty smart, you know, if the point of AI is to say, hey, you know what, I can now focus on like better storytelling and being more creative and making more thoughtful shows, then that's a great application of AI. If it's just, hey, you know what, I'm going to put this thing on autopilot and I don't have to
translate it into 180 languages and send it out. You know,
yeah. If that's that's a different conversation, I guess. But I think for the most part, you know, on balance, it's all good stuff. So I'm excited too. I'm just flattered you guys thought to bring me on to have this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Yeah, you bet.
I think the biggest takeaway of our conversation with Stuart was that considering yourself or others a specialist or generalist is very contextual, and folks can be specialists. They can be generalists in a very specialized field. So it kind of depends on how you're looking and how you're evaluating that profession or that career. So what I liked about our conversation was it's kind of fuzzy. It's not totally black and white. And with so many of these topics that we're talking about, there isn't a black and white yes or no right or wrong answer. It's based on, you know, comfort level of the person. It's based on context and environment. I don't know if I'm being too vague, but how did you think about that specific topic in our conversation?
Yeah, I agree as well. And like we have talked, these topics are topics that you will find yourself saying so many times, it depends. And it's not great, but it's a very personal experience and feeling that it's not easy to have one good answer that applies for everyone, because you will never find one. But yeah, I agree. And I also learned that just because right now you consider yourself a generalist doesn't mean you can become a specialist, and the other way around as well, because you have the power to choose which one you want to become depending on what you want to do with your career. And that does require a lot of self-evaluation and introspection. And I know it's easier said than done, but it's part of the process. And if you don't make the right decision on your first try, that's totally okay, because then you'll know that what you tried wasn't the best fit for you and you need to try something else. So in a sense, it's still a learning experience, right?
I'm so happy you brought up this necessity for self-evaluation, but compassionate self-evaluation and self-introspection, because there's no right or wrong answer. There's no, you know, you make a professional mistake and then that's it and the game's up, right? It all is a process, and it's a path. And I think that's really, really important to keep at the front of our minds when we're thinking about ourselves, how we relate to our jobs, and how we want to be in those 8 hours of, you know, a daily working day, right? I think that's really important to be compassionate and to be, yeah, honest with yourself. The other thing that we touched on is imposter syndrome. And I think one of the biggest takeaways is, you know, we're both fairly new to working at Castos and working remotely. We're coming up on our year anniversaries. Me and Maru have a little different starting date in Castos, but they're coming up. And when we were talking to Stuart, I got the sense that imposter syndrome never really goes away. It changes maybe how it resonates with someone depending on their skill set. But I think it's really important to kind of keep in mind that it's something that's kind of with us to stay for those of us who do suffer or have to deal with imposter syndrome from time to time. So I liked that he talked a little about that. Did you have anything about imposter syndrome that spoke to you in our conversation?
So what spoke to me is that no matter if you're a specialist with over 10 years of experience or a generalist with a very with not a very linear career path, you're still going to experience self-doubt and even imposter syndrome. So again, it's completely okay to recognize that you're feeling that way, but to know that you need to be kind to yourself as you're going through it and just maybe channel those feelings to recognize those areas where maybe you need to improve your skills or develop some other skills as well. And yeah, I just think I'm trying at least to see my self-doubt as an opportunity to improve instead as an opportunity like to punish myself because I'm not good enough, you know?
Mm. Right. Oh, that's such a great point. Yeah. No one ever succeeds when they're being harsh with themselves. And we all need to be kind to ourselves.
Yeah.
Especially.
And in this part, in this section, we actually also want to give our listeners some actionable advice, like some tips and ideas that could help you in this particular topic, because maybe you're trying to become a generalist or maybe you're trying to become a specialist. So for example, if you're trying to become a generalist, it's all about saying yes to new opportunities. And like Jimmy said, like a few minutes before we started recording, is that you need to get out of your comfort zone and just to say yes to those opportunities, especially where you'll be able to learn about a new topic or skill you haven't tried before.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say when I say get out of your comfort zone, it doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be far out of your comfort zone, but maybe it's next to your comfort zone, just right next door. So it doesn't have to have a painful sensation to feel like you're growing in like a professional way, but usually those new opportunities will find the person who takes them in new waters, new experiences. And it's good to go into that thinking, I'm going to learn some stuff, but things might be different than what I expected.
Exactly. Yes, that's a really good point. And also some other things you could do is like, for example, if you're trying to develop some skills and you don't have a lot of time, taking short courses or attending webinars are a great way of learning new skills without having to block a very big time in your calendar. And even if you want to do it as you're doing other important things or working, you could also try listening to some educational podcasts about the topics that you want, but the topics where you want to expand your knowledge.
Mara, I have a question. When you want to learn something new, how do you go about finding those resources? Do you pay for a big course? Do you read? Do you listen? Do you watch? What is your style? Because you are self-taught, a self-taught web developer. How did you learn? We'll probably talk more about this in a separate episode, but do you have any kind of go-to strategies for that kind
of
thing?
Yeah, sure. So in my case, I'm a very visual learner. So again, this just, I don't want to say it too much, but it is a process where you have to, it's a trial and error process because you have to find out what works for you. But in my case, I have learned that I'm a visual learner and I need to start by seeing how something works. I need to see like the end result so I can then start working on the process or the development of the thing. Because if I don't see the purpose of the thing or how it would look at the end, then I get frustrated as I'm trying to study or as I'm trying to understand things. So I try to watch videos, for example, if I'm trying to learn a new programming language or something different. I try to watch videos about people who already have like an end result or have built something or have already experienced something that I'm trying to learn about. And then I go like, I'll do like some reverse engineering and then I go backwards from there. And then I start reading some blogs and other people's stories as well, so I can then find the right resource for me, whether it's a course or some other YouTube videos. But I never start by paying a big course right away. I do a lot of research before paying for something because I wanna make sure that I try my best to make the good decision before paying. But it's okay if you don't make the right decision.
Let me tell you, listeners, I have paid for a few courses that I have not completed. So if you have done that,
no problem.
I hear you. It's all a learning experience. That's great. Yeah, I think I learn best probably, well, I don't know if I learn best this way, but the types of learning that I'm doing right now are through a lot of books and through reading and then through podcasts, because through podcasts, I can listen while I'm walking my dog or doing the dishes or doing something else that those tasks don't need my full attention. So I can focus my mental energies on listening to the conversation or learning.
Right. That's great. And that's also the last point I wanted to touch about the actionable advice. If you want to become a generalist, is to stay curious about not everything, because you don't need to be curious about everything, but just enough to don't be afraid of having more in-depth conversations or doing some random research on a Friday night just because you wanted to learn something new. Also talking to people working in different areas than yours. That's also helpful.
Maru, do you have any tips for how one would become more of a specialist in their respective professions?
Sure. So right now, I consider myself a generalist, but I am trying to become a specialist. So I'm trying to be more specialized, like in the programming world, right? And I would say that you have to be very willing to dedicate a lot of time to continue studying and educating yourself. And what I found to be extremely helpful is to talk to people who already have the experience and already are specialists in your field. Try to be very specific about the questions you ask and don't be afraid to ask follow-up questions if needed. This was a mistake I've done so many times, but right now I'm trying to be very intentional about the questions I ask to try to get answers that would help me improve the skills I want, but also get some insight about how is it to be a specialist in my field.
Could you say some more about that, the being more intentional with your questions? Could you elaborate on that if you could?
Basically, you know, when you're afraid to ask a question, you just ask the question, and because you're worried but at least that's my case. You're worried you're bothering them. You ask the question, then you get the answer, and then that's it. Because you don't want to make follow-up questions or you don't want to continue bothering them. But I have found that if I plan my questions beforehand, and then I ask them, do you have some time to answer some of my questions? Instead of overthinking it too much to just ask one, I will ask them beforehand, do you have some time to answer some of my questions? And then I try to be to let them know that I'm just going to ask a few and they are already like planned, so they know they won't need to spend like the whole day talking to me. And then I just be very intentional about my time to ask questions, so they know that it's kind of to be respectful of their time. But of course that also requires someone who is willing to answer your questions as well. But yeah,
right. So when you are hesitant about asking a question to an expert or a colleague or something, it's mainly you're worried about their lack of time to dedicate to answering your question. Or is there kind, I don't know. In my case, I sometimes self-censor myself if I have forgotten an answer to a question. I know I've asked this question before. I know I should know it. Sometimes I hesitate on whether to ask questions or not. So it's more about, oh, I should know this, or I've already worked on this before, and I should not be wasting others' time with this question. I don't know if you also relate to that.
Yeah, I relate to that as well. Mm-hmm. I punish myself if I forget something. Oh, yeah. Because most of the time they have to spend like at least a few minutes re-explaining something, and then I feel bad. But I guess that's 50-50, because then it's okay to forget things sometime. And then you have to say, I'm sorry, I know you explained this before, but could you try to do it again? And then letting them know that this time you're, I don't know, writing it down or recording the conversation. So you're being, again, intentional of the time you're using to ask questions. So you know, okay, I'm going to ask these questions and I need to write down or record it, or the best way it works for you to save the answer. But again, it's okay if you don't do it once or twice.
Yeah.
But just to try to be respectful, just say, I'm sorry.
It helps to have nice That's colleagues fair. As well. And we at Castos have some very nice colleagues that have a lot of patience with me, especially.
Yeah. But the other thing I wanted to mention on the topic of how to become a specialist, I will say that you have to be very careful about the information you find online if you're studying online or doing some research online. Try to look for recognized and trusted sources, because there are a lot of people on the internet who are not who they say they are. So when you're looking for a topic, try to do some research about the people who created the courses, or if you find some other trusted resources like newspapers or recognized sites, do some research about, okay, who are the people teaching these topics that are trusted. And the last thing I would say, if you're a generalist trying to become a specialist, is to look for opportunities where you can leverage your past experience and focus it to do a more specialized work. Because as a generalist, you know little things about different things. So when you're trying to do some work that it's like more specialized, start to think, okay, what have I done before in my various jobs and experiences that could help me accomplish this task better? And for example, Jimmy leveraged his past experience as a teacher to work as a support specialist. And Stuart, our guest, leveraged his experience in radio and audio editing to enter the podcasting field. So it's all about recognizing your strength as a generalist because of all your experiences, but channeling that into more deep and focused work if you're trying to become a specialist.
Oh, that's a great place to wrap it up. Maru, thank you for all this great information. Thank you for doing the deep dive on these studies of career paths from the 1950s. And you know, we talked about it with Stuart a little bit, how that's changed in some way, and how we think about it in a different way now, at least, you know, between us here. And yeah, we just hope that we can continue bringing some of these topics and some of these conversations, and to continue the conversation in the here and now.
Of course. Thanks so much, Jimmy. I had such a great time. Talk to you later.